This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to talk some Blues hockey. Welcome to the Blues NHL podcast, hosted by former Blues defenseman Jamie Rivers and former Blues enforcer Darren Kimball.
And we got a problem in front of the Hog bench. Kimball pulling at Roenick. Here's Kimball swinging at Roenick wildly, and the linesman trying to get in between them.
Federico stole it from Reinhardt, breaking in to Hunter. Hunter shooting, rebound.
Chevalier, he'll be thrown out of the game. Curtis Joseph grabs Chevalier, and the two goalies go at it head to head. And Joseph with three great rights.
Turgeon to Hall, looking for 500. He shoots, he scores. Brett Hall, number 500.
Oh, unbelievable save by Jake Allen. Tarasenko in the clear. He scores.
And now, here's your off-ice official, Jim Cromer.
Hello, Blues fans, and welcome to the Thursday edition of your Blues NHL podcast. I'm your off-ice official, Jim Cromer. I want to welcome into the studio our good friend, Darren Kimball. What's going on, bud?
No, bud, nothing. Rainy day here in the area.
You know, I don't have Mr. Rivers to my right, but he is on his way, so we're just going to get started before he gets here. I have a question for you, though. We do the Monday show, as you know, with our good friend Gary Henson, the head coach over at McKendree University, the Hockey Bearcats there. And this Monday, when we were listening to the intro, which, you know, which we always do because it just, you know, I love it. It gets us going, you know, for the show. I had asked him, you know, obviously we were fans of yours back in the day before we knew you, but then we got to know you and have become friends with you. So it seems interesting and surreal sometimes to listen to stuff like you hear on the intro. Like we sit there and think, you know, this guy sitting next to us that's very calm, quiet, sometimes fun, is that guy swinging wildly at Roenick. I want to ask you, and Gary and I talked about it off air, when you hear that every week, you hear it every week on the show, but you also see clips, people send you things. I mean, we see the stuff that comes on Twitter, some of your old fights. I'm sure you come across it from time to time or old things. Does that almost seem surreal to you that that was you, or is it just like you don't even think about it?
No. There are times when I'm still rolling around here and now I'm getting up in age, but there are times I just wish that I could do that a little bit more. But I, you know what? When I look back at it, that it was hockey was my life. So you know, and that was part of my life. And when I watch it, I'll sit at home and there'll be some when nothing's going on. I got nothing. I'm sitting there on the couch and I'll go back and I'll look at, I'll go on YouTube and I'll look at a bunch of old hockey fights that are going on just for the hell of it. You know, I just guys that I know or. And like you said, as we sit on Twitter, I'll see guys come across and they'll show these old fights. So then that'll interest me on who else he fought. And so I just go back through that process. But, you know, it's not far. I enjoy watching it. There's a couple that have come across that I don't enjoy as much. But no, but it's all good. I enjoy it.
You know, when you moved here and as you kind of implanted yourself into the community and became part of a community, really, you know, and you're very well known. You know, it was funny. Somebody had mentioned to me that they saw you at Quick Trip in Granite City where you live. And, you know, 20 people must have come up and shook your hand in Quick Trip, but not like, ooh, it's Darren Kimball. It's my friend, Darren Kimball. So as you became a part of this community, were people hesitant to kind of rib you a little bit about some of that stuff, or was it all in good nature? And did it really just depend on who you were friends with at the time? Probably.
Yeah, you know what though, and I think most probably 95 to 98% of your hockey players are that way. But especially if you're a tough guy, and I, you know, Granite City's not a or where I was, where Granite City and that is not a big area, so. You know, I know a lot of people there. I've been there for almost 20 years, you know. So I've met a lot of people. We've golfed with a lot of people. You know, we've golfed with the same people, actually, Chrome. And they'll come up and they'll rip into you. But I take it all and, you know, it's no problem. I get it. You know, I used to do that, too, in the locker room. That's what I would do all the time. And, yeah, if you don't have thick skin in this ball game, you know, you find yourself being angry with yourself a lot of the time. So, you know, I enjoy, but Granite City, like I said, is small. You go around, you know everybody. And it's just you got to have a smile on your face or you live a long life.
Well, you know, again, as you became a friend to many, it was pretty apparent that you embodied what we knew hockey players to be. And I've said it once, I'll say it again. I know it's this way probably in every town, but the fans really, I guess, endear themselves to you. You endear yourself to the fans with the role that you played. Everybody loves goal scoring, but everybody loves the role that you took on. And again, it is a role you took on, as we've said on here numerous times. Your good friend Jamie Rivers has pointed out numerous times, you know, every guy that is taking that role in the NHL at some time, at one time, sooner than you would imagine, was the best player on their team. Now, you obviously played with Mike Modano, which that would have been a tall order to be the best player on your team. But still, it was a role that you realized you had to play. So I know we as Blues fans always appreciate it, but it's funny. Gary and I talked about it off air, and we hear that every week. And, you know, it's kind of like one of those sitcoms where you hear these unbelievable memories going on. You look across the table, and you see this guy sitting there, and he's just – almost different than you would imagine. And you're so calm and cool and collective in here that I think everybody thinks fighters are all crazy and going to act ignorant, but you know, you just are. So, you know, it's good stuff. And I just wanted to ask you, like I said, because we kind of touched on it Monday and we were curious what you think when you hear that. So no, good stuff.
You know that, and when you're saying that though, and we're guys that do the job that I did or whatever, or even guys that are playing on the fourth line and they're bangers and that, those, you know, it's the guys that go to work for the 40-hour week, and they come and they go home, they get home after work, and they put a hard day of work in, and they're having a beer, and they look and they say, you know, that's the kind of person that they relate to, that guy, because that's what they did. It was the hard, and not that everyone doesn't work hard, but it was just the guys that go get their nose dirty, and that's the kind of job people do out around the area that we're living in anyway. And I think that's the ones that were sort of said, you know what, he comes and he pays his dues, and that's the ones they sort of gravitate to. And you know, we just go like the old work with hockey players are. You got to, and the Sutter, Brian Sutter was a big, you know, carry your lunch pail, and that's what you got to do.
Well, you know, again, Blues fans, you know, have always enjoyed you and all the guys, especially the ones that make their home in St. Louis. Yeah. So then that's what I think is why our show's done so well, is that's how people really feel when they listen to it. As far as the show goes, before we get into some Blues hockey, because we have to do that, of course, things are going really well right now. We want to remind everybody to make sure you check us out at bluesnhlpodcast.com. That is where you'll find the podcast. It's also the easiest way to subscribe. Many, many people have let me know that that's what they do, and they love it because they get a notification right on their mobile device. Hey, the new show's out. They know they can go listen to it. Again, you're changing the way you're listening to things, the way you want to hear it. You want to listen to it when you want to listen to it and how you want to listen to it. The easiest way to do it, subscribe at bluesnhlpodcast.com. It is free. Of course, we appreciate everything you guys do for us on Twitter and social media. You'll find us on Twitter at STL Blues Podcast, and of course on Facebook as well. Just type in Blues NHL Podcast. You'll find us there. And special thanks, as always, goes out to all the gang at lineupmedia.fm. Again, your entertainment time is valuable. They take it very seriously. If you're listening to this podcast, chances are you've listened to others. I assure you, if you go check out their lineup, it is fantastic. If you're a Blues fan, you're probably a Cardinal fan. Most of you know I do a show with Benji Molina called Two Birds on a Bat. Lots of stuff going on with the Cardinals right now. It's my favorite time of year, Darren. I don't know about you, but when I can watch Blues hockey, watch Cardinal baseball, I feel like my life is complete. And I know you're a baseball fan, too. I know your son plays hockey and baseball, and I know you're I know you've worn your Toronto Maple Leafs hat in here a few times. Not Maple Leafs, Toronto Blue Jays. But
you know, it's that time of year in St. Louis when you're the Blues are getting into playoffs. You're at a Cardinal game, and the scoreboard's coming up. The score of the Blues game, and the crowd goes crazy or whatever at the Cardinals. And so you know they intertwine here. So it's a pretty special. You're getting ready for the Cardinals, and the Blues are in the playoff hunt. So it's a pretty neat time to be in St. Louis.
Yeah, we've touched on this a couple times now, but I was curious with you guys not being here. Brian Finch, who takes care of the Cardinal Hall of Fame and deals with the Hall of Fame voting for the Cardinals, was in. And you know, we were talking about the relationship between the Cardinals and the Blues. We got into it a little bit more, and the story of the relationship and that puck drop with Stillman and DeWitt, the role that played in the Blues getting the Winter Classic, that still, to me, is amazing. That something that seems so right and real really was right and real. So it's just good stuff. I don't know. The relationship is great. I love the support. Now, when you first came here to St. Louis, back in that time, were you kind of like, I don't know what the word is, were you taken a little bit with Cardinal baseball and what was going on?
You know what? It was when I got here in St. Louis, it was actually we had a chance to go down and we went to Bartolino's, a restaurant in town, yeah, in St. Louis, and we always used to see Bart and go there. And the Philadelphia manager was in there at the time, and Jim Fergozzi. And it's nothing against, I'm just telling you the story. But anyway, so Bart was there, and he come in and he ate there, and he'd actually give, there was me, and I believe Chaser was with me, and a couple other guys, and he got us to go down, and so we got to go down to the field, and we're in the Philadelphia dugout when Lenny Dykstra and Dalton,
yeah, that crew,
and,
huh?
When they were all, oh, yeah, you know, big, and it was a, so I got to see it, and we were down the, and you get to see how the, because I knew how our locker room ran, but you go into their locker room and they're like, they have a bloody buffet sitting there and everything. It was just a different atmosphere that they're running, and it was kind of funny because I was sitting in their dugout. This is way before the game started, and they were out doing not batting practice, but fielding and all that. And Lenny Dykstra come in, and I'll always remember this. He come in, and the reason it was because I chewed tobacco at one time. I don't anymore, but I did it one time. And Lenny come in, and he had that big wad in his mouth, and he come in, and he was half-ass choking on it. And I'll always remember him coming in. He was gagging, and he come in, but that was our experience. And then we got to meet Ozzie Smith, and you know, we went down that road when Ozzie was,
sure,
you know, huge. And so you got to meet him, and so yeah, I was always a Blue Jay fan, but to actually get on the field and see what was going on was pretty, because those guys are huge. I never knew they were that big of people, but. God, they stand, and they're huge human beings, you know.
Yeah, they're bigger than you think. I think, yeah, most athletes are bigger.
Yeah.
You know, you see them, the basketball players are the ones that have always, some of the point guards and stuff, you think, well, you know, they're a point guard, they're a little bit little. And then when you stand next to them, they're 6'5", yeah, 6'6", and they're just enormous. But, well, let's get to some Blues hockey. As, like I said, I know Jamie is on his way, a little traffic issue, but we'll get started. Jamie and I had talked off air a little bit about some of the things that we wanted to discuss today, and we really felt like it was time to acknowledge King Kimble, to be completely honest with you. This thing has turned into an interesting situation for our Blues, as you know, we've rode the roller coaster, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. And right now we're on the upswing, 8 out of 9. And the main reason that we can point to a lot of things, but it starts with your guy, Jake Allen.
Oh, yeah. And not only Jake Allen, but he is the main guy, but his backup, Hutton, when he's coming in, God, he's you know, he's standing on his bloody head also. It's just like you're getting solid goaltending, and that's what you want at this time of the year. And you're going into a point right now, Cromes, you got to remember, and I said this way earlier in many shows, the first 20 games and the last 20 games, that's a lot, you see the game actually changes. And people are in they're trying to set themselves up to get into the right position for the playoffs. They're trying to make the playoffs, some teams are. So hockey, the intensity level starts to pick up now, running into the playoffs. And to get a goaltender, you know, you're 10 games, 12 games out right now, and both goalies on the thing. But the difference here, if you recall, and we'll go back to when Hitchcock was running this team, and I was thinking about it, he never really had a number one. He was sort of playing the guys off of one another, and that's how Hitch ran the thing. And I think you see with Yo, he's gone to, he has his number one guy here. So Allen's his number one, and they went to that at the start of the year, I know, but he's really taken this over. And I think the confidence level with him right now is just going sky high.
Well, you know, you had said all along, believe me, I get it. There was a faction of Blues fans that were calling for Carter Hutton. You were a voice of reason that said, hey, not so fast. Okay, here's the deal. I get it. Jake's struggling. And the apparent struggles at that. I mean, we're watching it unfold before our eyes. But I think the interesting stance that you took on the whole thing was, that's fine. Okay. If you want to play the other guy because right now this guy can't stop a beach ball, that's fine. But you're never going to get where you want to go unless it works the way it's supposed to work. And to your point, and this is kind of how it's played out, which makes you King Kimble, of course, as Jamie and I have said on this one, that Jake Allen's got to be your one, and Carter Hutton's a backup for a reason. What a backup does is he spells the other goaltender, gives him a break, and comes in and gives you a solid effort. But the reason he's a backup is because traditionally, he's not going to give you that solid effort night in and night out. That's why he's a backup. No disrespect to Carter Hutton,
no,
but that's just not what a quote-unquote number one goalie does. And I think that's I think that's what you were getting at, and whether people agreed or disagreed with you at the time is irrelevant. But the fact of the matter was, as a fan, again, what you see is a guy struggling and can't stop a beach ball, and then the other guy comes in and has a great game, and then you start questioning, well, do we go back to our one? That's a tough thing.
There's a thing here now, and you know, Cromes, if you're gonna fly a plane, you're gonna go talk to a pilot. If you're gonna, you know, build a house, you're gonna talk to a carpenter. You know, those are the things that if you're a smart person, you're gonna do that. And when I was talking to Eddie Belfour said, because he was here for a brief stint as the goalie coach for the Blues, and he said he worked with this kid. And I was just talking to him on the phone one day, and he told me about Jake Allen, and he said the guy has got it. He's got it. And as this season has taken its course, and so hindsight's 20/20, obviously, but let's look back at the whole Blues organization. Hitchcock was in here, and how this starts out with the 1 year farewell tour that Hitch is going to get, and you're going to bring Yo in to sort of be the guy coming in. All of a sudden, when you let Hitch go, and I'll tell you what, I blame the players on this as much as anybody, because I believe they laid down on the man. And when you lay down on the man, you just lay down on Hitch. You lay down on the fans, I believe. That's my view of it. And for whatever reason, though, so that's been said. Now let's go. We'll go forward. Look at how these guys are playing hockey right now. And it's almost like there was the elephant lifted off their back. They're all playing. There's guys that are playing with more confidence than they ever played. And to the guy we're talking about, Allen. So Hitch goes. Allen sort of comes in here, and now the team plays a little bit better in front of him, not giving up as much, and he is sitting here, and all of a sudden his numbers, you know, Christ, the guy's only, he'd be lucky if he gives up 2 goals a game now. And so his confidence is soaring, and hockey or baseball or whatever sport you want to play, it is all about confidence. I can watch it at a young kid. I can watch it at an old kid. If you have the confidence and things are going right, you're scoring goals, you're doing stopping pucks, you're making good defensive plays, and your confidence level rises, you just ride that as long as you can. It's a wave. We always talk about a wave in hockey, and the Blues are on a wave right now, and you just try to ride that son of a gun in as long as you can.
Well, and if you look at what we've seen, and I described it as a roller coaster, you can go back, like, you know, when this little streak that they're on, we had some fun with a friend of ours, so I actually went back and looked at where they're at, and I believe we're at 8 of 9, really, you know. Mm-hmm. But you know, you look at where you're at in the standings and you think, God, we're 8 of 9, but man, we had the 4 or 5 gamer where we couldn't get a win. You know, you had the stuff that happened right before Hitch got fired. And then you come back and you have the great stretch after Yo takes over. And then you lull again. It's been a roller coaster is really what it's been. It seems like what has me like looking at it from a positive is the last stretch that they even lost, I think it was 4 in a row. It may have been 5, but I think it was 4, is that the goaltending wasn't bad in that stretch.
Mm-hmm.
We just didn't get it done from a team perspective. So to your point, and again, we keep saying this, you know, King Kimble on this one because you were dead on. And got to give your credit, right? I mean, Jamie will take credit when he's right, right? So,
but it's not.
But it's the goaltending. That's what it. I mean, and if you want to ride a hot goaltender into the playoffs, you can be a handful for somebody.
I was sitting, and you know, as this is playing out, and I sat at home and I thought, and there's 3 things that come to mind to me on this whole thing. The coaching change is number 1. The way Jake Allen and Hutton have been playing, the goal. Actually, they're playing well, but it's sort of a defensive ball game that the whole team's playing, right? So they're not giving up many goals. That's the goaltender, the defenseman, the whole team defense. So that's number 2. And I still, when this all happened, there was a couple of young kids that got called up to the minors, and I believe, you know, and the one scores the other night, and the one other guy that we traded for, you know, he's got a couple assists, but you bring young blood into this, and When you put young blood in the dressing room, and I had a guy, and I put this on Twitter, and I said, it's amazing how these guys, the Blues, are doing them when the All-Star break come down in the American Hockey League where they sent Barbashev and them these guys down. You know, they went in that little rut. That's when the Blues went into that rut. So then the young guys are, and this guy says, well, they don't, you know, they're not playing. So just shut up. He said, it's not if they're playing or not. If you're sitting in the damn locker room, these young guys, and you've had success and the Blues have been winning, these older guys take notice of that. You know, they've been sitting here in this lull, and all of a sudden they say, well, we're getting to the time of year where I better start picking my ass up here. I got competition coming. Who knows? Because the grass is not always greener on the other side, as that old saying goes. And if I like St. Louis, I better start playing the game right, because obviously they're bringing some young guys up here. We're starting to have success. and I'm not stupid. I see why that's happening. So now I got to start. And I think that's when, you know, Berglund and these guys all go on these little tears, you know.
Well, you brought up Sanford. You know, I don't know what he is. A lot of people can read about him and do all this kind of stuff. I mean, but he seems to have played well
the
last couple games. Another guy that's kind of showing up that I think everybody had kind of given up on was Pajarvi.
Yeah.
He, interestingly enough, has showed up. And people are like, there are some people that are both dumber and smarter than me, which is easy to do. And as Jamie Rivers joins the studio, and as I say dumber or smarter than me, he gives me that look like, what good in the Lord world are we doing here, boys?
Who's welcome. Dumber than you?
Well, there's not very many people. But you know, we're just talking about some of the guys that are making a difference. Like right now we're talking about Sanford and Pajarvi. And, you know, Pajarvi, there's people saying, hey, you know, maybe it just took a while. I don't know. Is that realistic? It's taken this long?
Well, but it goes to what I was saying, though. So, and Pajarvi, they sort of relate him to a veteran. But Pajarvi, sort of, he's a young guy in this ball game, and like I said, the elephant in the room didn't just leave Allen's back. It didn't. These young guys have come in, and Pjarvi's one of the young guys. You know, they got a whole new life, and they brought to this Blues organization. And Pjarvi, obviously, him and Hitch, whatever Hitch was doing was, you know, whether he was sitting on his neck or whatever the hell he was going on. But that was, once he left, this kid sort of, he come to life.
Sure.
And not only him, there's been a bunch that have done that.
Well, as Jamie Rivers enters with his familiar can of Red Bull and a big smile on his face, let's get you up to speed. What we've covered so far is King Kimble is that, you know, once again, he was correct about Jake Allen and Carter Hutton. And
God, he's always right when I'm not here.
We've given him his salutations. We were talking a little bit about the youth, and what we were just getting to, and why I'm glad you're here, because you just never know when I'm going to need some backup here, is I was getting ready to ask him, now that we've went through King Kimble, I also know that you're not 100% sold, so Kimble's concerned. What are you concerned about?
Oh, here we go.
What are you concerned about?
No, I was talking before we went on the thing here. I like what the Blues are. I like where they're going. I think the schedule is very favorable for them going down the road to move up the standings. But I'm still, you know, the goaltending, the goals against are great. The time, I don't know. I'm not sold on it all yet. I just think you're going to get there. You could possibly, the way it's going here, Rivs, and you know this, you've looked at the standings. I don't think the way this could run out, you could run up to a sixth, a fifth seed here pretty soon, because you're going to jump into that third spot, maybe past Nashville, and that comes up. But there's these top four teams that's different than what they're playing right now. And that's why I sort of say fool's gold, Rivs, and I'm not downplaying. I'm just being in reality here. You're playing the Avalanche. You're playing these guys. They've won some big games against LA, what they should, but LA's not even in the playoffs. So it was a big game. But there's bigger fish to fry up here at the top, and that's what sort of you know what I mean by when I say fool's gold there, don't you?
Yeah, well, I agree with what you're saying. I think that, you know, part of that too is this is a group of players that have done really well together lately, and they've been going at it by committee. And I think when you don't have bona fide stars or these, you know, guys that are scoring left and right for your team every night, I think it worries people that well could run dry soon, where the hard work or just the team effort just isn't enough against some of these elite teams. And I think that's probably what you're alluding to is, they're playing a really good team game, but where do they match up against the NHL's best right now? Because, they're doing a good job in their own end. They're being solid, but where do they match up? And I think that's the main thing right now is, can they continue to do what they're doing now, which is playing hard every night and being in every game? If they play a Chicago, if they play a Minnesota consistently, if they play even the Eastern teams, Pittsburgh and Washington, you know, does this team concept, this group of sweat hogs, so to say, does it gel together, stay together against those teams? I think that's yet to be determined. I do think they're going to get in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
And that being considered, I think that it's easier for teams to isolate one team and build a game plan against. So like the LA Kings, 4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah.
They just got in, but each round they were able to formulate a game plan that beat their next opponent. And so you're not getting ready for multiple games. You're getting ready for one team for hopefully 4 games if you're lucky, but 7 games at most. And that way there, I think that you simplify things for your younger group or your group in general so they can be task-oriented and stay on pace with this stuff.
And I'll say, you know, when we're talking about the goaltending or whatever, and whatever I said back many days, But I also
he keeps going back to that. Eh? He always wants to go back.
Here comes,
that
here comes the backhanded slap that I'm going to give myself.
Here we go. Oh, geez, here we go.
I'm an honest person. You know, a show or two ago, I believe I talked about Tarasenko, and I wasn't. I'm not, and I'm still not overly. I don't. I think there's more for him to give. I really do. And I say that, and the guy puts two goals in the net that night. And then the guy does this, and he scores big goals, which is huge for the Blues right now. I just watch. I watch. For me, for example, he's supposed to be our big star, right? This is the Tarasenko. He's what it's all about. And then I watch a guy like Crosby, and I watch these guys. And I'm not saying he's that. Don't get me wrong, but he's the leader of your team. And I always think there could be more. And you know, he scores great goals, scores big goals, but I just think there could be more.
Well,
and he's proven me wrong.
Yeah, but
right
didn't
now.
We talk about that?
Yeah,
a bit?
No,
he's,
I mean,
he's not a Ferrari with four wheel drive, right?
No, exactly. I mean, I think that. You know, what you're talking about is some of these elite players that we know are the greatest in the game right now in the world. So, but if you look at their supporting cast, just for a second, you look at Washington, TJ Oshie right now has more goals than Alexander Ovechkin. Mm-hmm. Nicholas Backstrom, Kevin Shattenkirk, Carlson on defense. I mean, they just have several weapons at their disposal. In Pittsburgh, we could go down the list there as well. Even Edmonton, where you have Connor McDavid. You have a list of guys now that are really talented, including our own Pat Maroon, who's tearing it up this year. Yeah. So I just think that right now it's easier for teams to put together a defensive strategy to contain him.
Makes sense.
Because there's not no put down to the Blues, but they don't have another bona fide goal scorer in their lineup right now. Yeah. So if you have to direct your attention to one guy, it's a lot easier to cover him, and then you hope the rest of your team can pick up the slack with the other guys. So, yeah, could he be doing more? Probably. He needs to continue to work hard and continue to find the opportunities, but I think that it's harder on him right now.
And I agree with you on that, Riz. You're spot on when you're saying what you're doing there. You know, it's easy to focus on him, but you go back to the time, and I'm going to go back and when Holly was there. But Holly, and people can say what they want about the man. The man killed penalty. The man did work. He, you know, there was times that it's not necessarily Holly's in the corner, but Christ, he paid the price in front of the net. You know, Holly was always in front of the net. He'd come in with bruises. And he was our only, you know, we were first in the league that year, and he was our superstar. But, he, you know, and he's an elite, too.
And but we had, you know, we had Oatsy. I know he's just a distributor primarily. Yeah. And then Shanny came on board.
Shanny wasn't there when we went that on that one run. So
no, I know, but I'm just saying, like, they started to surround him with some guys that were a little, you know, a little more effective. So I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
But you're also talking about one of the best players ever to play the game.
Correct.
So it's difficult to have that as a measuring stick. I know I wouldn't want to be measured up against
for
that.
Sure.
You know?
No, I hear you.
So I guess we'll give him a little leeway right now. We'll see if we want to shock him later on or not.
Yeah. How much with, you know, not wanting to bury a guy, but, you know, it's hard not to notice that we've played some awfully good hockey with number 12 in the press box. You guys want to take a stab at this one? Because fans are bringing it up, so I think we have to address it.
You mean not dress it?
Well.
Quite honestly.
Well, okay.
First of all, here's my problem with that, okay?
Okay.
And if he was sitting right here in front of me, I'd say the same damn thing to him. You know, he just hasn't given the effort that I think everybody's expected. And what, he get a puck in the face and now he's injured for life? Like,
well, is he injured or is he sitting?
Well, you know, that's the mystery, right? Okay. You know, so who knows? But all I know is that, Kimby, I know you and I know the group of players that we played with, and I know it was a different time and this and that and the other, but I also have 13-year-old boys of my own that I coach, and that if they got hit with a puck like that, it wouldn't be the end of the game.
Yeah.
They wouldn't. They maybe wouldn't even miss a shift.
What goes on in the other players in the NHL? They don't miss much either.
No, and so, you know, him to do that, you know, it's just a sign for me that, come on, man. No guts, no glory, nothing. Like, why would I sacrifice of myself if this guy is being paid $4 million? He's being rewarded with an extension on his contract. He's underproducing, overpaid, with all the buzzwords you want to use for him. And is it a coincidence that they're, you know, being successful without him? I don't think so. You know, you're basically replacing him right now with Barbashev. In my opinion, that's the guy who slides into his spot. And Barbashev is contributing every game. He's winning faceoffs. He's in the right spot. He's scoring a couple goals, getting some assists. The guys like him. He's got lots of energy. So what's the solution on this one? I think you don't fix what isn't broken. And I think Coach Yeo just continues to ride this out. And if it's a fictitious injury, that we're just riding out and we're not calling it a healthy scratch, then let's make sure he stays injured, in my opinion.
Oh, boy. And you understand something, too, where the Blues were playing this year. Things weren't going real well, and the coach's hands get tied. He can start making moves, and people really start questioning him. When you start winning and you're playing on a winning hockey club and you get hurt and you go out of the lineup and you go on a five-game win, you better be a top-six hockey player if you think you're just going to walk back into that lineup. Because, you know, when we were playing, and I was a guy that come in and out of the lineup, and Sudsy could even pull that off with me. Me and Chaser were dinging, going back and forth, and we were winning hockey, and it pissed you right off because, you know, you were doing all you can. You were fighting, but you couldn't say nothing to the man because we were winning. Now, if you're on a losing team, it's a different ballgame. But when you're getting pulled out of a lineup on a winning team and they go on a streak, you got to answer. And look, that's a hard one to go.
Well, yeah, and I can tell you, I speak from experience on that one too, from my time in Detroit when I played with the Red Wings. And there were lots of days where I went home and iced at home and went to doctors on my own on the side. It's not because they weren't providing the care. They would, but if they think you're injured at the rink and they think that you can't go, they're going to pull you out of the lineup. And guess what? The Detroit Red Wings at the time, like, you get pulled out of the lineup, doesn't matter who goes in, they're going to continue to win. And at that point, it's like, well, okay, well, you know, make sure you're good and healthy. We want to make sure you're ready. We want to make sure you're back in shape.
Don't give them excuses.
Yeah, and then 3-4 weeks later, you're still sitting there eating popcorn. So, you know, I think that, like Kimby said, he's bang on with the fact that they're winning hockey games right now, and when you're winning, nobody questions the decisions and nobody questions the lineup while that's going on.
Well, I want to jump, you know, obviously we've had this great run, but, you know, we live in a what have you done for me lately world, which they're coming home, which is great, and we're going to get to that in just a minute. But before we do, you know, there are great things still happening, even though we're kind of technically getting past youth hockey season, although everything's year-round now. So I got some great questions I want to ask you because I know you've been doing some great things, Jamie. Before we do that, we want to remind you that our St. Louis Youth Hockey Report is always supported by our good friend Sean Vincent and the whole group over at Vincent Mortgage. Remember that you can chat live with a loan officer at vincentmortgage.com. Get all the information you need instantly. You want to visit vincentmortgage.com and just click chat with a mortgage expert. You'll connect live and in real time to one of their professional loan officers, and they can help you figure out the best way to reach your family's financial goals. You want to get pre-qualified for a house in 2017? It takes less than 5 minutes. Again, you know the phone number, 314-839-9999, or just visit vincentmortgage.com. Great supporters of this St. Louis Youth Report. I know, again, we always say he's a good friend of yours, but there's so much good stuff going on. Jamie, I know we're in the offseason. Synergy Hockey is up and rolling. We talk about that every week. And, of course, you can let everybody know because people are curious where they can go to improve their game over the off season, if you want to call it that. I don't know in youth sports that there is an off season anymore.
Yeah, no kidding.
And people think that all the time. People think you get better playing games. A lot of times you get better in your off season. So you can throw that out real quick if you want, because I know people are curious.
Yeah, you know, we're officially up and running with our spring sessions, which include a lot of consulting work that we're doing, but also we're going to have small group lessons going on, which is basically two players for one coach out there, which means they get a lot of hands-on coaching and certainly be able to focus a lot better than having a huge group with one coach. We try to isolate the players so they have a good work-to-rest ratio and that the corrections and the instruction can be right there. If people are interested in that, we have one session going on Tuesdays out in Merrimack at the Shark Tank. And then we have Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday afternoons going on at the Ice Zone out at St. Louis Mills. And the best way to check it out is go to synergyhockeyskills.com. Check everything out. And if there's any questions, obviously send an email or give us a call, and we'll do our best to answer them.
Now, a lot of the St. Louis community that's involved in youth hockey, especially if you're knee-deep in it, is aware that we are going to be losing the Hardee's Ice Complex. There was a nice article in the paper. It looks like some of the alumni are going to do a little last game there and, you know, probably turn it into a little something. Just, I guess, as a way to pay tribute to which was probably a big building in both your lives for quite some time. I know, Darren, you're out there with Lawson a lot, but there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes, and I know you can't tell everybody everything, but can St. Louis youth hockey people rest knowing that the future's bright in St. Louis for what they're going to have available to them?
Yeah. You know, first of all, just to hit on Hardee's Iceplex for a second, and Kimby, you know, you're there. We see each other, I don't even know how many times a week.
More than you want to.
Yeah, several times a week, yeah. But, you know, Hardee's Iceplex over the years has become this hub of hockey in St. Louis. And, you know, I always reference the TV show Cheers, right? Because you walk in, it's like the same people in the same place every day. Doesn't matter.
Norm.
Yeah, exactly. Doesn't matter.
Jamie.
What you're doing, you got those people there. And that's kind of what Hardy's Iceplex has become over the 20-year run that they've had, or 25-year run, is you walk in and literally you know everybody in the place, and the staff that's there, the people that work there, they really haven't changed those pieces out at all. So you've got a comfort level with those people, and it just feels like home. And my boys last night, we were headed over there just for a quick skate. They were like, you know, we're really going to miss this place. We don't know life without it. And my one boy was like, you know, he's like, I feel like I'm at a second home. And that says a lot for what they've developed out there, what they've managed to put together. And I can tell you honestly, without the Hardy's Iceplex going in 1995, I argue with anyone that our development in hockey is as great as it is now without it, because we really needed that complex. We needed those three sheets of ice, and we certainly needed to grow membership in St. Louis to not just support youth hockey, but to continue to support the Blues, as we know that the price of everything is going up. So we need more fans all the time. So I just wanted to, you know, get that out there and thank the Hardy's Iceplex and their staff for a great run. And without them, it needs to be noted that there wouldn't be the sport of hockey the way it is right now in St. Louis. But moving forward, the Blues, as well as the Legacy Ice Foundation, have put together some great drawings in a great area and have a piece of land in Maryland Heights right off of 141 near 364 and 141. And the plan right now is to put in four ice sheets over there. And I can tell you what, by looking at them, it's going to be fantastic. They're going to be one sheet that's a 3,500 capacity as far as people are concerned. Wow. I think the goal there is to bring a USHL team on board. I believe that that's already in the works. You know, and then the AAA Blues are going to be a primary tenant there, as well as the St. Louis Blues practice facility. It's going to be really state-of-the-art with a huge workout facility off ice as far as weight training and conditioning, as well as an off ice hockey area where they're doing shooting lanes and stick handling, slide boards, synthetic ice, all sorts of stuff, to where this is really going to become the hockey hub of St. Louis, and it's smack dab in the middle of the city. So we're losing three sheets. We're gaining four, hopefully within the next year, hopefully August 2018, this project's finished. And then I do know that from there, there's projects in Chesterfield that are gaining some momentum, as well as Afton, where they're both looking to add two sheets each. So if we get, you know, those four sheets combined with the four sheets at Maryland Heights, you know, technically a year from now or 2 years from now, we're five sheets up from where we are right now. And hopefully we'll look back on this setback of rinks and be able to survive it and then grow even bigger afterwards.
Well, guys like yourself, and I know you can't and won't get into everything you're doing behind the scenes, but you're an integral part of the growth that will happen eventually the growth that's happened, and then the continued growth as well. Darren, your thoughts?
You know, just on a couple things Jimmy said, you know, the Hardy's place, That put a lot of people into the National Hockey League, a lot of players. Last year, you're going to see like five or six kids going into the National Hockey League out of that group. So there's a lot of memories. You know, even when I always look back at the rink I grew up in, and, you know, it's no longer there. But when I drive back to where Lucky Lake was at, I look, and that's where there's a lot of memories created there. And I live there. And I understand what Rivers is saying about his kids. You know, you live at the bloody thing. You know every nook and cranny in the damn place. If the cops come to get you, they never find you, because you've got to find and hide.
Cops come looking for you?
Not me, no. But so there's a lot of history there. And, you know, a lot of things have happened there for a lot of people. And the good thing is, though, so that when Jamie talks about this new arena, when you travel around, I've been up to Pittsburgh for tournaments and that, and we go play in these places. They're state-of-the-art places. And the Hardy's place served its purpose, and it was there. But it almost, you need a new outlook now. Times have changed, and what Jamie's talking about, where you get these off-ice things going on, where you get a weight room and all, and these kids can, because the game has changed so much. These kids are working out all the time. They're like Jamie's program. You get take that off-ice and work with these kids on their shooting, whatever you can. It's just enormous where you can go with this thing. And you see it in Pittsburgh, and you see, you know, everywhere. Phoenix has got one. But the game's changed a lot here, and that at the youth level, and that's where it's nice to see that St. Louis has come along for the ride. There, it's awesome.
Well, I can tell you, sorry, just so people know too who are listening, that this is a huge group effort to do this. It's not just one guy, some investor that's trying to put a project together. This is taking several people that come together, including the city of Maryland Heights, to help out with it. And then obviously St. Louis Blues are spearheading it with you know, their movement and trying to get a new practice facility as well as grow the sport. So as far as people being involved, we got some pretty big hitters involved, meaning that they're really, the interest level in hockey is very high and they're doing it for the right reasons.
Well, that's awesome. There's just so many great people involved. One of the guys that will obviously benefit from the great stuff going on is another supporter of the Youth Hockey Show, and that's your guys' good friend Scott Nelson over at Nelson Land. And we encourage you guys to go to nelsonlandservices.com. Give them an opportunity for your business. They're trying to grow their share here in the St. Louis market, and they've asked us to help them with that. You can easily call them at 636-244-5651. But what they'd really like you to do is just go to their website so you can get an idea of what they do. It tells you a little bit about them, of course. NelsonLandServices.com. It is the only name in landscaping that you're going to need to know. If you want to add some splash color into an existing landscape, maybe a waterfall or pond, you can transform your new home into a private paradise. Nelson Land has the tools to do the job and do it right. They specialize in multiple areas of landscaping to satisfy all your needs. If you get on there, you're going to see landscape design, lawn maintenance, landscape maintenance, everything that you will need for your yard, everything if you, again, if you just need anything from basic work to some of the most elaborate work that I've ever seen, some of the stuff that if you're a Blues fan and you're in this area, I guarantee you've been down to the lake, so well established down there, and some of the awesome things that you see down there with all that lakefront property, I guarantee you they've done some of that work. If you're in that lake area too, it's 573-392-9993. But here in St. Louis, where we're trying to help them get that foothold going again, that phone number is 636-244-5651. And all they're really asking you to do is go to NelsonLandServices.com and just take a look at some of the work they've done. But they're big. You know, their kids play hockey. I know they're friends of yours. Our good friend Gary Henson has made no bones about the fact that he sure would like to see their son, their oldest son, I guess, in a Bearcat uniform. So it's been a neat platform for that as well. But, again, just another supporter of youth hockey in the St. Louis area.
Yeah, I mean, they're a great family, great kids. You know, Kimby would certainly – I have a good relationship with the family, but Kimby has a great relationship. I know that they hang out a lot at the rinks, and their kids play on the same team. So, you know, Kimby, I mean, obviously he's your buddy, does a great job with this, but just a great guy in general too.
Yeah, and he's got – and they're getting ready here. He's got this crew. They're getting ready to roll here. This is the big time of the season for him. So, yeah, go on their webpage. It's phenomenal what you see on there, what they can do. And this kid, the one that Gary's trying to get, I talked to his dad a lot about what he can work on. I've been doing that all year with him and that. And, you know, we sort of look at the game the same way at the we're all about work. You talked a lot of the older guys. It's about work. It's about work. And that's what we sort of stress a lot to our kids. And so we sort of got the same mindset, but we traveled all year together. So it was pretty neat.
Well, they're great supporters of hockey in general, but they also support the show. So we're just asking you to support them. Again, that's NelsonLandServices.com. Gents, we're coming home. We talked with our good friend Angela Sharp, who Gary likes to say is awesome at being awesome, about what it means to come home from a road trip. We come home to Vancouver. When I hear Vancouver, I cannot help but think of the Sedin twins, okay? And I've always wanted to ask you, and I keep forgetting, that we have a general hate for these guys. I don't know if it's the whole we're twins, we got to play together. I don't know why they've rubbed me wrong since they've come in the league. And they're obviously a talented couple of guys. But golly, do they rub me the wrong way. And do we just not like them because they're twins and are playing on the same team? Or is it because they play for Vancouver?
It's nothing to do with Vancouver. You could put those guys on any team in the world and they're still going to be dickheads.
Uh-oh. I mean, bam, body part reference, Twitter alert.
No, but listen, you know, they're good guys and whatnot, and I know guys that play with them, and I said they're good guys. But to me, it's just too weird. You know, I've got twins. They don't look the same, but, you know, I don't dress them the same. I make sure they don't play on the same line. Like, all that shit just gets weird after a while, you know? Like,
yes. Yeah, but you don't mind when the Barbie twins are dressing the same way.
Uh-oh.
Well, that's different. They don't have red hair and shoot left-handed either, you know?
They might.
But I got a great story about the Sedins. It's not a fantastic, but it's funny, subtle. And our buddy Chelly, Chris Chelios, was one of the world's most hated players when he played, and he certainly didn't hold back with the stick, the elbow, or his tongue. And we were partners together playing in Vancouver, and you know, everything comes to the front of the net and there's a scrum. I think it was Burroughs on the line with Sedin and Sedin, of course, the Sedin sisters. So we have a scrum in front of the net, And, you know, Chelly and I, of course, you know, never mind Burroughs, we both want to face wash the Sedins and do what we can there. So we're going at it with them, and then the referees come in, and the one Sedin's all mad, and he's trying to spit something out in English at Chelly. And Chelly looks at him and says, "You know what? Your brother is the ugliest son of a bitch I've ever seen." And it was quiet, right, for about a second. And then I literally start laughing my head off. And then the referees start laughing. Even their own players start laughing because it took the, they still didn't figure it out. And then they figured it out after everybody started laughing that, obviously, you know, they're identical twins, right? So he's saying, "Your brother's the ugliest son of a bitch I've ever seen." It, obviously, a good insult. And we laughed about it for a while.
I just saw, you know, I was watching the NHL Network, and Chelly's out with Gretzky's camp going on right now. And they're interviewing Chelly, and God, the guy looks like he still can play the game. He just looks like Chelly, you know. When I knew him from when I played with him, it was just, the guy looks amazing still.
Oh, he's a spray tan guy's freaking dream. I'll tell you that much.
Spray tan in the sauna.
Oh my God, yeah, exactly. No tan lines.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned a name that I'm glad you brought it up. I loved Chris Chelios. Now, a lot of Blues fans did not like Chris Chelios. But I think we, as Blues fans, a lot of us recognize, and you tell me if I'm wrong, would we not have loved this guy if he would have wore a blue note on his chest?
He was by far one of the greatest teammates I ever had. And I hated his guts, too, until we got to Detroit and played together. And, you know, here's a funny thing is, you know, Chelly had been around so long in the NHL that I was still a somewhat young kid when he broke in with Montreal. And when he started playing the way he did, I kept telling my dad, "I want to play like Chris Chelios. I want to be like Chris Chelios." And so I didn't model my game specifically after him, but certainly a part of it, that as, certainly as my career went on, that became more and more like Chelly. And so then when I got to be on the same team with him, you know, everybody kind of has that one aha moment or that one like starstruck moment. I remember, you know, walking across the room and introducing himself. I'm sitting here going, "Holy crap, this is the guy that, you know, for years out in the outdoor rink, I was pretending I was freaking Chris Chelios out there and doing what I had to do." And then as I went on in the NHL scouts and all the stuff that happened for the draft, you know, they're comparing you to a player and they compared me to Chris Chelios. And so for me, I mean, the guy was one of the best teammates I've ever had. He'd do anything he could possibly do for a teammate, a former teammate, and he plays the game the way it's supposed to be played. Even if you're best friends, you know, he's going to play to win, and after the game, you know, he'll buy you a nice cold beer, and he has no problem doing that stuff either, but you better keep your head up while you're out there.
He is the ultimate professional hockey player when it comes to when you would go and play games and to show up to practice the next day, and he'd be, and he's your leader, one of your, and your best hockey, your best defenseman. He's one of the best defensemen overall. I don't care what anyone says. I watch this man play, and It wasn't smooth. It was, you know, it was a rough looking, but he worked so damn hard. And when he would come to practice, and I remember Gary Suter was there at the time, and Suter was just ripped like out of a rock. You know, the guy's muscles everywhere. But him and Chelios would compete so hard. When we got skated or whatever, they weren't going to be the last guy. They were always the top guy there. And he would work his ass off. He hated getting beat. And I swear to God, I played with him for 2 years, two years, and he might have got beat one time on a basically on a one-on-one, just once. The guy was phenomenal.
And once he got beat, it never happened again. Well, you felt a stick real quick,
oh
didn't
boy,
you?
Did you ever?
Yeah, no, just a great guy.
No, you know, obviously he's that guy. There's been lots of guys, I think, in the NHL that you love to hate as a fan of another. Some of them maybe not. Like, I know you've referenced a guy that you really enjoyed trying to get a thing at, and I believe it was Claude Lemieux.
Yeah,
that was the guy that kind of
Pepe Lemieux.
That guy. Now there's a guy that was a pain in the ass that I don't think anybody ever wanted in a Blues uniform for sure.
Well, you'd want him there, and the reason why you'd want him there, Chrome, is because the guy's he's wearing jewelry on his fingers, and the guy got to places, and when he got to the playoffs, you know, you look at these playoff performers, Claude Lemieux goes down as you know, he stands at the top of the list on some of these because the man won three cups at least. And
he was signed specifically a couple of years late in his career because he was a playoff performer. And I remember he had like 5 goals all year.
Yep.
Everybody's like, "Oh, my God." You know, then he got to the playoffs and had like 16.
Yeah.
So,
but how does that happen? What is the deal with it? Is that a guy that just coasts and then turns it on? Or
no,
is
what
it,
happens
is it a
is
big
this.
Moment type thing?
No, what happens is the career goes on, okay? I don't think it's a secret, and we'll just speak very openly and honestly. As your career goes on and your body wears down and just everything, your motivation sometimes for an 80-game schedule, and now it's 82, but back then 80-game schedule, I don't want to say you're not motivated. You are, and guys who were on the bubble, you know, I always felt like I had to be motivated, but Claude Lemieux, you know, he knew wherever he signed, he was on the roster, he was going to play. And all those years of making the playoffs and making the Stanley Cup, like it goes 100 games sometimes before, you know, your season's over, and that's not even including preseason and training camp. So I think the end of his career, it's not that you conserve energy. I think that it's looked upon as less urgent sometimes by those guys. But then when the playoffs come, I remember Chelios being this way with Detroit near the end of his career. When the playoffs come and you're looking at, you know, you got to have 16 wins to win the Stanley Cup. Let's say you end up with somewhere between 20 and 25 games overall if every series goes longer or whatever. These guys can put it together. Short term like that, you have no idea how they can. The level of play, the intensity, the attention to detail, everything that happens, it spikes through the roof because they know in that short period of time, one, that it's needed, and two, they can do it. Like they know in the bottom of their heart, like they can put it together for that much, and they can give everything they've got for that short period of time.
And there's guys, Cromes, you got to realize when the playoff hockey gets to you, the magnet, it gets big, so big. And sometimes it gets too big for some people. And when Claude Lemieux, his style of play, you know, during the regular season, guys can get to him. They can kick the crap out of him. They can kick the shit right out of the guy. And it happened to him. But when playoff hockey got to here, Claude Lemieux's balls grew so big because you couldn't do nothing to the man. Because, you know, if you go after him, you could cost your team a playoff game. And that could cost you the series. And Claude Lemieux had that because he could get under your skin so bloody bad. And he could disrupt a whole damn hockey series because everything would be going fine. Maybe they're down 2-0. All of a sudden, Claude Lemieux pisses someone off, and that guy, like what he did to Draper in Detroit, that just turned that into the biggest rivalry going at all of a sudden. And he's got that mentality in him. He doesn't give a shit. No one's going to be able to touch me right now. But in the playoffs, he gets a little quiet. And in the regular season, he always got a little quieter. But in the playoff time, he just become enormous, and that's how he played the game.
Well, and one thing too you have to remember is that Claude Lemieux was one of the strongest guys in the NHL. Yeah. He was a bull out there. He built like a brick shit house. He was hard to get off the puck. And if you messed up and didn't know he was on the ice, if you didn't take note of when he came on, you could end up in a bad situation. You could end up getting hurt. And I can tell you that I battled him night in and night out, and I took every shot I could at this guy. Hit him with a stick, elbow, fucking headbutt, whatever I could do to this guy. And he kept going back for more all the time. And that's not just me. Every guy who's out there, like you said, every single guy is taking a shot at this guy. And he keeps going back there. So not only is he a good player, he's a determined player, and he was really strong and dangerous if you weren't careful.
Well, for both of you guys, you played against so many people, but is there, like, if I say to you, who's the one guy that you used to, when he was on the other side, you knew when you showed up at the rink, you knew before the puck dropped, you're like, this guy, it's probably multiple, but give me one name of like, man, I'm in for a long night.
Oh, man. Well, I'll give you two names.
Well, you can give me two or three.
I'll give you two names, and it's just for different reasons. The most difficult player that I ever had to play against was Jaromir Jagr. And let me tell you, you watch him back in the early days when we could hack and whack and grab and pitchfork guys and hold them up and grab them by the head. That guy was still leading the league in scoring. He was still dangling in and out of guys at will and scoring. One stick a game would get broken on him, on the back of his legs, on his arm, anything you could do to try and discourage him, and you just couldn't. He kept scoring goals. He'd get to the front of the net. He'd have guys piggybacking him pretty much through the friggin' offensive zone and carry guys to the net. So for me, whenever I had to play against him, I knew that I had to be really, really on top of my game, that I couldn't just go out there and run him in the first shift and he'd shut it down. You know, like, he's not going to shut it down. So you had to be, you know, one stick length away from this guy all the time, or you were going to get hurt big time on the scoreboard. So for me, as a skill player, better than Gretzky, Lemieux, harder than Gretzky and Lemieux to play against because he was so big and physical with the puck. Now, the other guy that was a very difficult guy to play against for me was Ty Domi. And obvious reasons, he's a hell of a fighter, and you know, we know the big Bob Probert fights that he had.
Sure.
But he could skate in a straight line. Like, he could skate like a son of a bitch out there, and he'd dump the puck in, and he'd make sure he ran your head through the boards every time. And when I played in Ottawa, we had a huge rivalry, the Battle of Ontario up there with Toronto, and it seemed like every friggin' other night we're playing the Toronto Maple Leafs. And where I was in the lineup, I matched up against their line. And at the time, it was Gary Roberts, Darcy Tucker, and Ty Domi, which three pretty tough guys to be lined up against. But I didn't worry about Tucker and Roberts very much, but I worried about Domi because he could hurt you. He could. If he catch you with your head down, if he wanted to cheap shot you, and then if he wanted to fight you, he could hurt you too. You can't. He was a guy that you had a hard time hurting, period. Whether you hit him, slashed him, cross-checked him, or punched him in the face, you had a hard time discouraging that guy or hurting him. So he's the one guy that the night before going into it, the morning of, you know, you're getting mentally prepared that you're going to be going through a bit of a war that night, and you better be ready to do battle.
What about you, Kimby?
Well, I'm not going to narrow it down to myself here. But look at the National Hockey League. Look at what goes on in the National Hockey League. Your elite players eventually get a ring on their finger. I don't care what you just look at them all. You get Gretzky's, the elite players, the Crosby's. They always sort of come to Ovechkin's the next guy in line here to somehow get there. When he gets there this year, I don't know, but you look at these elite players. Look when Colorado was hot, and you get Sakic and Forsberg, but they got a cast that comes with them here now. So sure. It's not like you're just focusing on one guy, but they're sort of the leaders of the parade. Mary Lemieux, when they won the Stanley Cups, but they had a cast that come with them.
Sure.
But these guys had the respect of the National Hockey League and their own teammates. They knew they were the top dog. And when you're the top dog, I can't put myself there, obviously, but just think of these guys, the pressure they had on them when they were trying to win these Stanley Cups. Like even when Holly was here in St. Louis and the pressure that he had on them, and you know, I understand he goes away and he wins cups, but the pressure that I saw that he was under, the magnitude that the glass that he was under, it was amazing. And for them guys to come out and answer that bell. And especially in the playoffs, you know, you look at Gretzky, Lemieux, and they lead the playoff scoring race, or Sakic or Forsberg or Jaeger. I go all these guys. But the elites always find a way. If you can ever just get a flyer on them and just hang on to them, they might bring you a Stanley Cup. And that's what a lot of guys have done in this thing, you know, that you find a way to jump on that bandwagon, and hopefully you can get one.
Not going to give us a name, though.
I'm looking for a name. You quit sitting on the fence, Kimby. You had a couple of guys you didn't like. Come on now.
It's not that I don't like it.
No, you know what I mean.
I played a different role. And
yeah, but you know what? I know the role. I don't know it like you do. But there's guys for sure like that. You lie awake, you're like, fuck.
Well, no,
if he hits me with one, it's going
to
be.
The guy that I will always follow, and I could sit there until I'm dead, ready to go in the grave. Like Twister, me and Twister used to fight all the time. In junior, we had a rivalry in junior. It wasn't as big in the National Hockey League, but in junior, we fought all the time. And, you know, I guys like Rob Ray, I fought him a bunch of times too, or Stu Grimson. But
you just knew, like when you played, yeah. You knew it's not an if, it's happening tonight.
There was a lot of nights, Krooms, that I would sit there getting ready to go the next day, and we're supposed to be this all tough guy, and nothing ever bothers you. I'll tell you what, I sat there many nights till 3 a.m. thinking about what the hell's going to go on here tomorrow. I knew I was going to. That was our time of hockey. You knew you were going to fight, and that was the way our game was played. It was there. It was going to happen. You manned up, and that's what had to happen at that point in time. That's how our game was played, but. You know, but I have a history with Twister. I fought him like 10 times. And so there was something that I went with, you know, I have all the respect in the world for the man. And that's just the respect that we gained from where we started out as 16, 17-year-old kids to where we got to like 25-year-olds that were doing the same battle.
You know, as a fan, I sit here and I hear you say you fought Twister 10, 12 times and you're still here to talk about it. I'm sure I don't know if you look at it that way. But
wait, you know,
I'm still good looking.
He's going to say something. We're on radio, right? This isn't TV. So now to change it back a little bit to what Kimby said, and, you know, like I always say, I never occupied the same role as Kimby or those guys. And that's the one thing I don't think people who watch the game realize about these guys is it's one thing to go out there and get in a fight. And, you know, I used to say, well, if I can't find a fight almost every night, there's something wrong with the way I'm playing. And it has nothing to do with me going out there knowing I'm going to fight a guy and knowing, you know, it's you just run around enough until someone gets sick of it and they want to challenge you. And that's a lot easier to deal with it that way than to know, like Kimby had to go through, like the next night, You're playing against Twist. You're playing against Crimson. You're playing against Probert. You're playing against all these guys, and you know that if their team needs a boost or whatever, or that everybody in the world is expecting that fight, and everybody acts like, oh, this is an easy, go fight the guy, right? It's not easy. One, you've got, at the time, whatever TV was covering the game. So you have a number of people watching. You get arguably 15 to 20,000 people in the building. You have your teammates. You have your family watching. Whatever's going on. You know, I argue with anybody. The whole schoolyard thing where at 9 a.m. you find out you're going to fight the toughest kid in school at 3 o'clock in the parking lot. But then the entire school shows up to watch it. It's a little nerve-wracking at that point. You don't want to get your ass handed to you. And you don't want to get hurt. So people don't understand the mental struggle that these guys went through and the respect that they deserve for knowing full well that they're going to get punched in the face. Now, how are they going to manage it? How are they going to do? That's a whole other story. But the mental anguish alone of it, I commend every one of them that did the job. And I was a lucky guy to have these guys around to clean up my shit. I can tell you that.
There's one. There's a three-letter word that is in, it is in every tough guy there is, and it's ego. And because you're fighting in front of 18,000 at the arena, but then whatever's on TV, but you don't want to go out there and get your ass handed because now you got to live with that. And I'll tell you what, it beats you up. It beats you up.
Well, I mean, you guys both, you know, lived a life that we can only live through by watching and trying to understand what you did. And I, you know, again, laying awake. I would do more than lay awake till 3 in the morning if I knew I had to face Tony Twist the next day. So, good for you. Yeah. Speaking of the next day, today is a new day, and you know, the Vancouver Canucks are in town. Brian Elliott and the Flames come into town Saturday, and then we catch the Coyotes next Monday. So, three what I would call winnable games, no doubt, at home with the way they're playing. How do you see this shaping out? I mean, we're getting down to the nitty-gritty here, Jamie.
Well, those are three very winnable games. You know, Calgary's been hot lately, and they're right in the thick of things, and Elliott has been red hot, and they got a young man, two young men that I notably, Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk, one of our own here from St. Louis, that quite honestly, he's put together a great season from a kid that was probably going to be sent back to junior 7 games into the season to where he's fifth in rookie scoring now in the league. And he's having an impact in several ways, even if it's a couple of dirty hits here and there, an elbow. You know, he's playing with edge like his old man did.
Came by that honestly, didn't he?
He did, absolutely. Yeah, that's the, I call that the mass hole in him because his dad's from Massachusetts, so we call those guys mass holes. And he's got enough mass hole in him to keep going here. But it's all right. You know, he's going to earn his stripes doing the, playing that way, and he scores goals. He makes good plays. So Calgary, to me, is the one team that I certainly wouldn't underestimate. There's a couple of guys, you know, Brian Elliott for sure, that has some motivation to come back here and play well. And Matthew Tkachuk, he's going to have every family member that he has here and friend and whatnot watching the game. So those are two guys that are going to be a big part of it. And Johnny Gaudreau can be a part of any game. 3-4 points later, you don't know what happened. You're losing. So Calgary is the one team I'd worry about. Coyotes, you know, they're a rebuilding team, I guess, or one of those teams that keeps hovering in that area. But they can be dangerous. They got a great goalie, and if he gets hot and decides that he wants to put up 50 saves, and he'll do that. And it'll be a night where you go, holy crap, what the hell just happened? We should have had those 2 points. So to me, the Vancouver and Coyotes game are one that's going to be a battle to make sure they stay on track and make sure that they're sticking to the systems, their structure, all that, the discipline. And then Calgary's like a playoff game. That's a team that's right there with them. Should be a lot of body checking, should be fast-paced, should be a lot of action. A game they're going to have to man up to win.
I think, and that's Chrome's before Jamie got here. I told you, coming up here, these, you know, they've had the schedule favors the Blues right now, who they're playing. But I want to see what they can do, and Calgary is a perfect example of that. They're in the hunt. They're going to be in the playoffs. They're a big team. They play nasty. They, you know, that's who the Blues are going to have to run into here for a while. Big teams. They're going to take the body. How are they going to react to that? So, you know, you're going to get it. Let's get away from the Colorados and the Phoenixes here for a bit. Games that you better win. You have to win these in order to stay where you want to go. But let's see how they react to a team that's got as much to play for as they do, and see where they're, you know, size wise, because that's the size sort of scares me in a 7-game series. But you're going to run into, you know, Rivs. You play this game. They lean on you. They do whatever. It wears on you. So we'll see. The Flames will give them all they got, and we'll see how the Blues stand out of that one.
Well, let's not look past Vancouver as they just left Chicago with a 5-4 win with goals from both the Sedins. And interestingly enough, they both have exactly 14 goals. This thing is really too weird for me.
Too,
yeah,
right?
This is really weird for me right now. So let's just move past it. Hey, good stuff as always, guys. Like I said, we'll see where we are as the next time we convene. We'll be a little bit closer to seeing where we sit. I know that... you still need to see a little bit from him, Darren, to make sure that this is going to be a good ride for him. I think I'm a little bit more in the house that I like what I'm seeing. And like I said, by evidence of my own opinion, when they did have the little hiccup there before this 8-9 started, it wasn't the goaltending that was the issue. It was just pure play, which I, 8 out of 9 with road wins in many, San Jose and L.A. for me. Tells me that we got a team playing well, so I'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they keep their foot on the gas. I've said it several times throughout this episode that you can't look back, you can't slow down, you can't change anything you're doing. You got to keep going exactly the way you are. And if there is a hiccup in the road where you have a loss or two, you still have to stick to what you've been successful doing. And I think that that's the main thing for them headed down the stretch.
And I like where they're at, because now when you sit down after supper and you watch the news, the Blues are on the news now because they're there. They belong there. They're getting talked about now. You're getting excited for what's going to be coming down the road here. And hopefully this continues to roll. I'm skeptical, but I'm still, I want them to win, obviously.
Of course.
So, it's going to be an interesting ride.
Great stuff, fellas. Reminder, make sure you support the people that support us and help keep the show on the air. Don't forget our good friends at Vincent Mortgage. Again, you know that number, 314-839-9999. Or, of course, you can just go to vincentmortgage.com. Again, nelsonlandservices.com. Their good friend Scott Nelson of the show. Just give them an opportunity for your business when it comes to anything you're going to do with your yard. They do unbelievable work. Again, that's nelsonlandservices.com. And, of course, the phone number, 636-244-5651. And, as always, from the St. Louis youth community and all the work that they're doing, synergyhockey.com. Give them a look, especially if you're really wanting to take your game to the next level. That's where you're going to need to do it. Gentlemen, great show as always. We got a game tonight, which always makes it a great night. So I say to you from Jim, Jamie, Darren Kimball, our producer Brian, and everybody here at lineupmedia.fm, let's go Blues.
This podcast was a presentation of lightupmedia.fm.